Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Des Bishop Podcast. It's Tuesday, not that it matters. Another Nun Day. And we got a great episode coming up today. Me and Joanne chatting. We only talk about Corona for a little bit. And then we have a great chat about... myself and Joanne had said that we would maybe workshop some material for her. Because she's working on some new stuff. But actually, she was saying that in the midst of all the madness, she's got a bit of time. She's thinking about writing a show about being adopted. So we have a little bit of a go at workshopping a show about adoption, which kind of leads to a really good chat about being adopted, which we talked a bit about before in a previous episode of the Des Bishop Podcast years ago. She's kind of coming at it a bit more of a humorous way. And I think it's a really good app. So stay tuned for that. You know, I was actually, I had a Trump rant in me this morning because of everything that happened last night with Trump's press conference. But I'll just say really quick. First of all, I'm definitely doing a Trump episode tomorrow. A straight up just me on my own Trump rant coming tomorrow. I don't want to waste too much time leading up to the chat with Joanne, because it's really good and it's kind of just like overload. But can I just say that Trump is basically now saying this can't go on that long and we're getting back to normal really quick, which is just, I mean, it's fine if you're willing to have those deaths on your watch. So I'm going to, but it's not fine. I mean, the truth is, man, he could have tested straight away when we had the first cases in America in Washington State. He could have got into serious testing. He could have nipped this thing in the bud like they did in South Korea. He didn't do that. Now he's trying to act like it's possible to be South Korea with the thing running rampant. New York hospitals are soon to be completely overwhelmed. He's going to have to push this whole, like, the cure is worse than the disease message amidst people dying in hospitals and the horrible stuff of people not being able to be on ventilators. And these Republicans, which, by the way, it's taken over Fox News now. The cure is worse than the disease. Fox News is just all day. This can't go on. We can't, you know, our I wanted to leave a good legacy for my grandchildren, and now it's all being taken away. So in fairness to these senior citizens, these people in their 70s and their 80s, they're saying, I'd rather die than have my wealth wiped out. So, I mean, fair enough. They're the most at risk, and they're saying it. But, you know, I just think that the short-term pain of this, they've hardly experienced any of it yet, and they're ready to jump ship. You know, I just think at least 1 month of focus on trying to flatten the curve would have been a lot more effective, and they just seem to have no ability to sacrifice that. You know, the mighty dollar is more important than a human life, you know, and that'll be on him. That's my opinion. That'll be on him. He keeps making comparisons to the flu, but the flu does not overwhelm health systems. I mean, it does put pressure on health systems, but it does not overwhelm health systems. Car accidents don't overwhelm systems. The only car accident that overwhelms a health system is the car accident that is the Donald Trump presidency. Can we please just admit that? You'll have to watch the press conference yesterday, the absolute nonsense he was talking about. Plus, he keeps pushing hydrochloroquine and Zithromax combination as a potential treatment, which 100% it is a potential treatment, but there has been no proper testing done on that. There will be shortly, and we will know for sure, but he's putting it out there as if it's the be-all and end-all cure. Like, he's basically convinced that, you know, soon it won't be a big deal because we'll have the treatments for it, which is fine when we know. But right now, it's just a gamble, which is what Donald Trump does. He stands up there and he's like, I just got a good feeling about it, you know? And then Sean Hannity goes on Fox News and he's like, there's a guy in Florida that was, you know, he said goodbye to his family. He was about to die. Then he took the drug and he was fine. Oh, so some guy in Florida in the New York Post, and we're going to base a whole a whole strategy, a whole health strategy, public health strategy for 350 million people on this guy from Florida who we don't even know if it was the drug or maybe he just recovered. We don't even know that. But they're just pushing that. And it might be the drug, but it's a fucking gamble. You have no idea yet, you know? And if we did that with every mumbo, you know, that's like these people that are like, you know, oh, my grandfather had cancer and then he just started eating vegetables and then he was fine. It's like, really? Show me the evidence. Show me all the scans. Show me all the stuff, because it's total fucking bullshit. And Trump is an anti-vaxxer. That's the whole thing. Now he's a fucking medical expert. You know, watch his speech when he's actually, I think he was running. He wasn't even president yet. And he's like, this big, beautiful baby. Then like a big needle, like a horse. And they shoved it into his body and then he was autistic. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not saying we don't vaccinate. I'm just saying not all three at the one time. Not all three at the one time. That's what I'm saying. I'm an expert now. You know, all my companies have gone bankrupt. I've really been an unsuccessful businessman, but I've managed to con the whole fucking world into thinking I'm a successful businessman because I'm a successful con man. That's what I am. And now, suddenly, at a time where being a con man is more dangerous than it's ever been in the history of humanity, this motherfucker still thinks he can con the world on a public health crisis. The whole fucking planet is self-isolating. And this guy's like, nah, it's a little too far. Yeah, I don't like the stock market going down because I'm worried about the re-election. And I don't really care about the American people. All I care about is how it pertains to my ego, because I'm the deepest and darkest narcissist we've had in the world since Adolf Hitler. And I'm not comparing Trump to Hitler in terms of the horrific shit that Hitler did. I'm comparing it in terms of the deep, deep narcissism that drove some of that fucking ridiculously horrible behavior. Oh God, I just don't even know why I talk about this guy. Why do I talk about him? Because it just puts me in a bad mood. You know when you're in a relationship and somebody says, let's not talk about this now because it's just going to put us in a bad mood. And they're like, no, we need to talk about this right now. And then 15 minutes later, you're like, we didn't have to fucking talk about this now. Now we fucking hate each other. Well, that's where I feel about Donald Trump. But I'll talk about it a bit more tomorrow because I just don't want to tarnish this episode with my rants about Trump. Oh, God. This is a great episode with Joanne McNally. Let's just get into it. I have to stop myself. So we'll chat about that tomorrow. How about that? So for now, here's me and Joanne. And I'm not even going to talk to you at the end of the ep. I'll just use the end of the ep to say goodbye, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Don't forget, subscribe, 5 stars on iTunes, at Des Bishop on Instagram. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. Thanks for your comments. More comments always. If you listen on iTunes, if you listen on Spotify, take a screenshot, put it up on Instagram. Chat to you guys tomorrow. Bye.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey. All right, Joanne, we're back.
We're back.
We're back in Quarantineville here.
Quarantina. How's your isolation going?
Well, you know, my isolation is fine, really, to be honest. I can't really complain. I've got a nice setup, and the only difference between here and Ireland is I'm not with my brother Aiden, you know?
Poor Aiden.
No, Aiden has a girlfriend.
Oh yeah, he'd be grand. This is the time me and you were saying we should have got married and had kids. Not together, but to other people.
Sorry, yeah, well, we were having that chat. Yeah, I mean, sometimes you feel that and then other times you don't, you know?
Yeah, I'd like someone to kind of share the stress of this. Also, I'd like a second income. That would be ideal. If I had a husband who had a job, it would be great.
Yeah, but the thing is that he wouldn't be able to go out and work, most likely. So you'd be stuck at home. You'd be stuck at home together right now.
Ah, yeah, but like you put them in separate rooms. All my housemates are still working. I'm the only one not working.
They're going to the office?
No. They're all working from home.
No, that's what I mean. They're at home.
Yeah, but like the brands and all now are going to have to get really smart. That's why I was like, so, I mean, Jesus, if another comedian goes live on Instagram, I've had to switch that off, all those alerts off. I'm like, I can't, it's like one after the other after the, we're like thirsty for content and attention now. It's worse. We're worse than we've ever been before.
Well, I mean, I think in fairness, people are just desperate to pass the time, you know?
I know.
I mean, I have been doing a ton more content, but I haven't been doing the lives. I find I'm not wild about lives. I'm not wild about live streams, you know?
I know, because like by the time you tune in and you have to wait for ages, they're waiting for ages for everyone else to tune in, and then they're just doing yoga and you're like, this is not interesting. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Well, no. I mean, I'm quick, short snippets all the time, and it better be. I mean, obviously, there are some people that follow you on Instagram that like your everyday life shit. And then there are some people that just want those quick hits of funny stuff. I try to get the balance right between quick hits of funny stuff and then also just sharing a little bit of, like, you know, my everyday life, but never like oversharing to the point where it's just like, what?
I had a couple of like production company types on going like, oh, is there anything you can make from your house on your own? And I'm like, no, not really. Like, I'm just not that type of comic. Like, I'm not going to make sketches on my own.
I can attest that they should not do that with you.
Yeah, I know. Actually, I can't even say. It takes us about 30 minutes every day to get the mic going. I haven't a clue.
I know. And me and Katie and me and Steve, when we do this, it's like, I call him, I'm like, are you ready? And we go.
I have abilities. They are not in technology. My mother's more technologically savvy than I am. She was Skype calling me the other night. I didn't know how to answer it. I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, it's great that technology has really shown itself to be a pretty amazing, because most of our media right now, well, like I'd say 50% to 60% of all news reports are going out through some sort of remote home situation. Yeah. Now, I would love to have, I mean, I have that capability to a certain degree, but I think that they have like upgraded their systems. They've got good mics. They're getting pretty good sound and pretty decent quality image. I almost feel like it's worth the investment. I can see why these production companies are contacting you, you know, just like,
they have to keep making stuff. They want to keep like making content. But oh my God, you've just reminded me. Do you remember? I can't remember why he was at home. Do you remember that newsreader had to do a report from his own house and his two babies came flying in on their little train machines and their little strollers? Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah. It was one baby, right? The guy, yeah, I remember that. He had a Korean wife or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, I mean, other people I talk to, they're like, this is the best thing ever. I'm never going to leave the house again.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain things that you are, there are certain, like actually, I had this weird thought. Trump is obviously full of shit, but he's really pushing the fact that hydrochloroquine and Zithromax are going to be some sort of like miracle drug for stopping the progression of coronavirus, which of course I don't believe. I think he's just guessing. At the same time, I did do a bit of research on where some of this info is coming from. And of course, there is a chance that this will be helpful. And then I thought, oh, fuck, what if they actually figure out a way to make society go back to normal when I've really just settled into this quite fun, doing nothing, fucking relaxed life?
I know, it's like a holiday. When I go on a holiday, it takes me a while to kind of like dial it down. Do you know what I mean? To like take the foot off the gas. And then it takes you a while to get the gas up and running again. So, but I mean, this is going to go on. This could be a year. They're talking about social distancing for a year.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
I'll be re-virginized.
Your hymens are growing back all over the world.
Hymens are growing back.
Yeah, because that's the way it's been. Like there's been reports of like you can the water in Venice is clear. You can see the fish. Was that you that was saying that to me?
Yeah.
So also hymens are returning.
Hymens are returning. Yeah, like disgraceful.
In saying that, I see the Dow is down 750 points anyway. Fuck it, whatever.
But so, like once it picks up, it's just going to fire back up again. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. Yeah, I mean, the fish coming back into Venice is the most exciting thing ever. It just goes to show you how damaging we are.
Yes, I know. I mean, we did discuss that on the pod, right? That wasn't just our own personal conversation.
No, maybe
sometimes I forget if we discussed it publicly or we discussed it amongst ourselves.
I remember reading an article. I can't remember again if we discussed this publicly, but a couple of weeks ago, like I was like laughing at everything that was going on. Do you remember in China they were washing each other's hair with like selfie sticks? Like the barbers were standing way away from them, washing them with sticks and stuff. And I was
I hadn't seen that.
It's very funny. It ended up going viral. Like funny in the sense that like it just looked ridiculous. And as well, there was a woman, an Italian journalist, writing about dating in the time of Corona. And she was talking about turning up on a date wearing like, a mask and all. And I was there, that's so ridiculous. Like, would you not just hold off on the dates for a while? But now you're like, I have to, like, you have to keep that part of yourself going.
Yeah, well, I mean, funnily enough, that is the topic of today's episode of The Shift. So I'm actually planning on discussing all that with Katie. You know, I mean, I personally think, without doubling up, because I know that we have a lot of cross listeners, but just very quickly, I personally think that there's been an increase in like sexting and stuff like that.
Yeah, but there is, like, I actually went back onto Tinder out of pure and utter boredom. And to be honest, you're like, what do you talk about? How are you getting on? How are you getting on? Corona, 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 corona. Like, there's no sexy chat.
No, no, but that's with strangers, you know?
I'm not even in the mood to have sex myself.
No, but I think you got to go into the back catalog, you know? I think,
yes.
I think this is a good time to go into the back catalog and be like, hey, how are you? Long time no see. Show us your cock.
Yeah. Oh my God, you're dead right. Actually, totally, me and my housemate were talking. We were saying, like, there's been a lot of check-ins. Now, she gets it more than I do because men want to look after her. Men don't really want to look after me. I don't give off that vibe.
Yeah, but she's also been active. She's an active participant in this more than you, I feel, personally.
She is. But she's getting a lot of those, like, check-ins from lads. How are you? One guy went, like, it was so bizarre. He's actually an Irish guy. I was ashamed. Straight in, like, do you need anything? Like, they matched on Tinder. And he's like, do you need anything? I can drop something round. She's like, no, you're grand. Like, how are you feeling? How are you coping? I'm really worried about you. They've never even met.
Wow, he's playing, like, the I care about you card.
Yeah, but he really overplays.
You know what he wants to drop off?
Of course.
A load.
His load. Woo!
But anyway, I don't like killing topics, but I that is literally the conversation that I'll be having with Katie later. So I know that we have a lot of cross listenership. So I don't want to be doubling up, even though our last episode was called 2 Meter Tinder.
Well, that was, I'm dead inside romantically now anyway. So this is just, I was kind of playing with getting back into the game, and now that's obviously not going to happen. So I'll just.
No, you got to focus on work, Joanne, which I did think would be maybe fun to do today, personally, just because we've talked a lot about the coronavirus in general, and there will be plenty more conversations since. So the two things I thought we'd talk about today is, one, very quickly, about the insane scenes from Ireland of pictures of like mobs of people in Howth and Malahide as our final coronavirus chat. And then, as a complete break from coronavirus, perhaps we would try to tease out one or two ideas that you've been messing around with.
Yeah, sure.
Did you see these images of Howth and Malahide and all this?
I know, yeah, it's crazy. Like, this is the thing. We're not equipped for this. We've never been through this before. We don't understand. Like, and you think as well, we also have this habit of judging other people for shit we do ourselves. So like, the same way as I look at people smoking, I'm like, that's disgusting. But when I do it, I think it's chic and cool. So like, when you go walking, I'm like, today I was walking out in Clapham Common in London, and they have these kind of outside gyms set up, and one of them was full of men, like they're obviously like a little CrossFit group or whatever, all on top of each other using the machines, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, people just don't get it. Also, I would like to say, in the UK, Boris is going mad because a lot of the people here are nipping off to like Skegness, to their country retreat. And he's like, you can't do that. That's so stupid. You're going to put like pressure on the medical services up there, if there's an ambulance. But I'm like, Jesus, if I had a country retreat, it's the first thing I do. Like, look, you did it. It's the first thing I do. Like, people are getting pissy with people for not understanding. They just don't understand.
But there is a bit of resentment out. There is resentment out here for the New Yorkers that are just piling out. Now, in my defense, and this is just temporary to me, I came from Ireland straight out to here. So I only brought the Irish disease, which is way less than New York City right now. New York City is really one of the worst spots in the world right now. So I feel a little bit better about that. But at the same time, it is the same thing. Like, this is my summer house, and I've come out here, you know, and this place is equipped to deal with a surge of people in the summer, but it's not equipped to deal with a surge of people in March who possibly will end up using the health service. So I can understand how people would have some resentment. I mean, it's fair enough. But then on the flip side, it's like, yes, it's annoying, but your property taxes are way lower. You know, like, you know, all these summer houses pay full property taxes if you're a full-time resident. So all their children's go to these schools, you know, like, so there's like pros and cons, but I completely do not dismiss the fact that they're like, hey, fuck you, stay where you normally live and keep your disease there, you know?
Yeah, which is what they're doing. And also, would you go out walking? Like, if you're a family or whatever, like, you're going to be on top of each other. Like, I see the pictures and yes, I think, oh my God, they're ridiculous. But in those people's minds, they don't think they're doing a wrong thing. What will happen is we'll go into lockdown and no one will be able to leave the house and that'll be the end of it because we're not capable of making these decisions.
Well, they're going to have to because it turns out people aren't able to adhere to the restrictions, you know? So obviously going for a walk, keeping safe social distance is totally fine. The problem is that everybody wants to do it in a beautiful spot. So
you suddenly
get 30% of Dublin's population in four areas and it's impossible to keep social distance.
Yes,
you know?
Of course.
So everyone's, it's all well and good to go for a walk around your own street. You know, you can keep your safe distance, but you can't all walk on Dunleary Pier at the same time. It's just going to be mobbed. But more importantly, when you're outside a chipper, and the chipper's trying to do the right thing, only letting one group in at a time. The chipper is also responsible for the fact if he ends up with 40 to 50 people in a queue going all the way up the street, all on top of each other, it's up to him to say, I'm sorry, guys, there can only be 10 people in this queue.
Come back later. I mean,
but
and everyone's just trying
to,
of course, because he's trying to make money because he's like, when am I ever going to make money again?
100%.
It's not our decision. It can't be our decision. The decision has to be taken away from us for it to work.
Yeah, because people keep forgetting that, like, even though the Irish cases aren't going up by that much right now, like it's leveled off a little bit in terms of increases, the truth is that on that queue of 50 people, I mean, it looked like there was like at least 50 people in that queue. On that queue of 50 people, odds on one person had it, and now probably four people have it as a result of that crew at the queue, and those four people are going to give it to another four people, and there's 40 to 50 new cases just from that queue alone. That's the whole idea behind this, you know?
I know, yeah.
So it is unfortunate. But what are you going to do? Like, at times you have to take risks. I went to the supermarket yesterday. It's restricted, six feet apart, limited amount of people in the supermarket. I queued up outside. Then I got into the supermarket. Everybody social distance. But it's still a risk. You know, you're still touching things that may have just been stocked. You know, there's certain risks when you go out.
So and it can live on things. It lives on things. It lives on surfaces and it lives on paper and it lives on your post. And it's fucking everywhere.
Yeah, it's everywhere, you know. So
it's everywhere.
Anyway, I do think it's hilarious though because like I saw somebody on Instagram and they were complaining. They were like, because they live in Malahide, right? So they were like, I went to the beach today and there's people everywhere and I was walking around and I was like, will you ever fuck off? And it's like, well, you're on the fucking beach.
Exactly, exactly, exactly.
You're on the fucking beach too, and I get it, you know.
We're
but
so.
That's why I came here. The fucked up thing about out here is that this beach is private.
It's so, we are so wired to look at what other people are doing wrong and we are so blind to what we ourselves do, rightly or wrongly. We're so blind to ourselves.
Well, the idea was meant to be that you if you go to a park and it's too busy, you go somewhere else, but nobody pays attention to that.
And what's happening is because Boris yesterday was like, look, if you can't behave yourselves, if you can't make these decisions yourselves, I'm going to lock you down in the next 24 hours. So, of course, everyone's like, oh, right, well, fuck, we're going to be locked down the next 24 hours. Everyone's gone out because they're like, right, well, this is the last day we can go out. There's no winning. There's no winning.
Well, Boris really, yeah, whatever. We fucking repeat ourselves. But he really fucked up because he was too blasé for too long.
Yeah.
And Trump is even worse. Trump is now basically saying, like, the cure is worse than the disease. So basically in 2 weeks' time, no matter what the situation is, we're all going to go out and fucking get back to normal, you know? Because he's worried about getting reelected. He doesn't give a fuck about humanity.
Yeah. Well, he could get it. He's prime. Prime for the picking.
Yeah, although in fairness, he's been lucky. He's been around it twice already and he hasn't got it.
Really?
Yeah, he's had direct contact twice. And he didn't self-isolate either. Everybody else that has contact with a confirmed case isolates. He didn't isolate. He did that twice.
Of course he fucking didn't.
Yeah, twice. I fucking Mar-a-Lago had to shut. They had loads of cases, you know?
Interesting.
And then Romney self-isolated because Rand Paul, the senator, had it. So Romney had contact with Rand Paul recently. So Romney self-isolated. And then you saw what Trump did yesterday, right?
What did he do?
He goes,
fill me in.
So they said four senators have isolated as a result of Rand Paul, blah, 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 and Senator Mitt Romney. And Trump goes, oh, Mitt Romney's self-isolating? Jeez, oh, that's a pity. Because he hates Mitt Romney. Like at a public press conference in front of the whole nation. The nation is worried about people dying.
He's a little bitch.
Like, yeah. And he's like, oh, that's obviously I'm delighted Mitt Romney got it. Fucking, I hate that guy. You know what I mean?
So it's so sick. Juvenile. Oh my God.
Insane, bro. These people are fucking insane. You know?
Yeah. There's a couple of people I wouldn't mind getting it now, to be honest. But I'll probably end up getting it myself. So anyway, let's talk about something else. Can't keep talking about coronavirus.
Listen, honestly, I have been just focusing more on silly videos. I have not been writing any material yet because I'm in the middle of a new show. Like, I just did that, you know? I'm not even halfway through a new show. I'm probably in the first quarter of a run of the show about my mom. So I haven't really been focusing too much on like writing jokes. I've just been messing around about the situation that we're in. But you, on the other hand, you have been at a period of writing stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, I was talking to Sean Walsh today. We've been chatting on the phone about some ideas. And he was like, have you ever done a stand-up show about your adoption? And I was like, no. Like, I did one.
What are you talking about? You did the show PJ.
No, that was years ago. So that was called Separated at Birth. And it wasn't really a stand-up. Well, it was a comedy show. But it was like the second show I'd ever... It was my first... I went from being in a cast then to a two-man with PJ and then went out on my own. But like now I'm a better writer. Like I've been kind of doing it for a length of time. So at the time, like I remember Una, the director, was like, PJ really carried that show because I wasn't comfortable in telling my stories or I didn't know where the comedy was. Do you know what I mean?
I feel like he was a little further on that journey too, right?
Yes.
Like,
well, I was
in the sense that you were a little fresh with this thing with your mom and the fake mom and...
Yeah, the fake mom. Oh, God, you remember about the fake mom.
Of course, you told me on my podcast. You told me on this podcast.
Oh, so funny. Anyway, Sean was like, I think you should write a stand-up show. Now, it'd be very Edinburgh-y, but...
Yes, that's very themed.
Very themed. And my thing now is like... That from now, like Edinburgh probably won't happen this year. Hopefully it won't happen. Fingers crossed it doesn't happen. So I won't have to write another kind of themed arc show for another year. So I'm like, yeah, I will do that. But kind of like writing stuff for the clubs. Problem with writing stuff for the clubs is you can't test it now. So you're better off probably trying to write like a themed show. So I think I'm going to do an hour on adoption.
Well, I mean, I definitely think that that's good to do anyway, especially now that you have time, you know?
Yeah.
And even if Edinburgh happens, it's not a waste of time because like I'll give you an example. Like my dad was nearly James Bond, that show.
Yeah.
You know, I had written at least three different times, like summaries and proposals for a show or a book or like more like a serious show about my dad's insane childhood versus the life that he gave us based around the fact that he once had an audition for James Bond but regretted not being an actor in my lifetime because he wanted a stable life for us.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, he also hid from us this horrible childhood that he had. But I could never figure out like what the arc was of that show, you know? It was just like a thing... That I remember mentioning it once to the pajama men, being like, I have this idea. And they were like, yeah, it's a little heavy, you know? And then when my dad got sick, one day I was sitting down, I was writing a couple of jokes about dealing with my dad's illness. And then the whole thing just like revealed itself to me, like an apparition of the Virgin Mary. It was like, this is the thing. And, you know, and it became a great show. But, you know, it wouldn't have happened that way only for I had this stuff in the can. So even if you don't do a show about your adoption for 2 years, it's definitely a good exercise to do right now.
Yeah, and I've touched on it. Like, I've done little gags here and there in bigger parts of the show. The only thing is, it's kind of a weird one because my birth mother has asked me not to speak about her. So I, like, and that was obviously a huge chunk of the story. So I can't talk about that at all. My birth father's all about it. Actually, he's just started following me on Instagram. So he wouldn't give a shit. But it's more, I think, what the stuff that I like writing about is the kind of nature versus nurture side of things. So like, what parts of you do you inherit? Like, what parts of you are born into you and what parts of you are learnt? So, say when I was a child, there was some things I was really shit at, like maths. I just wasn't good at maths. I struggled, it's the same. That part of your brain is the same reason I don't know how to use, I didn't know how to set up that mic before we started this podcast. Like, there's some kind of just like, there's something not quite screwed in there when it comes to like machines, technology, numbers. I'm
You never got diagnosed with anything though, right?
No, now I did get tested for ADHD, but I didn't have it. I'm very airy fairy. I have a very short attention span. I don't like getting into things. Do you know what I mean? I don't like kind of like, ugh. When you're like plugging in there, I was like, oh fuck it, let's just leave it. Like, I just don't like getting into things. But then in another way,
that's probably more like ADHD.
Potentially. But then because I can concentrate on stuff that I like. It's just the shit that
In terms of, go on with the, but then how that fits into nature versus nurture.
Yeah, but then there was another part of me when I was young. I was really, really good at spelling. Like, so I could spell stuff. I don't know. It was like, even as a child, I was like, I inherited that. Like, I always knew I was adopted. So I was like, I think I got that from somebody. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was a little like, I was like, I'm shit at maths. I'm good at spelling. And in my family, they were the other way around. Like, so my dad was amazing at maths. My brother is an accountant. So they were all like real, we were so opposite that I was like, that feels like something I inherited. That kind of stuff fascinates me.
Yeah,
What did you get? What did you learn?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a great area to go down because you have this reason to get into it. But then there's also just so much information to research that can then influence your jokes, like studies of twins. You know, they've done studies of twins that have been separated and the different lives that they've had. And I can't speak with any authority on it, but I know for sure that if I sat down and wanted to get into writing a show about the fucking nature versus nurture, I would love to sink my teeth into the jokes that go with that, you know?
Yeah. Like, you and Aiden are the spits of each other. And like, that's...
Yeah, but that's for you guys. It's not to us.
Yeah, but you know you are. Like, you have to believe people when they tell you.
Yeah, we have the brother similarities.
You know? You're so like, yeah.
But anyway, just in terms of your scenario though, I mean, it's such an interesting topic to dig into immediately.
And it's hard,
nature versus nurture.
It's like mixing paint. Like, say you mix two colors of paint. It's like trying to separate those colors again. It's almost impossible. But there's you'd be kind of going down like a pop psychology route, which I love a bit of pop psychology.
Yeah, well,
love
you should do it for sure. But the great thing is that you can personalize it in terms of your own story.
Yes, exactly.
Now, have you gone into this at all yet, jokes wise?
No, I did have a couple of jokes just about being adopted and recycling and all that shit. But no, I haven't. No, because it's, you kind of, what you'd have to do with a show like that, I think, is write it and then go back and gag it up so that you're not like, it's an interesting, what's nice about it is it's an interesting topic. So
yes.
People would probably like to listen to it anyway. And then your job as a comic is to make it funny. So if you kind of write it all out, and looking at, again, like what you were saying.
Yeah, well, let's bang out a couple of potential headlines on the, you know, like, because I always break down, you know, my shows into like, you know, potential areas or whatever. So let's just quickly break down potential areas, right? So number one would be realizing you were adopted, right? There has to be some jokes on being whatever, 4 years old or the beginning of your memory. And then how soon you had memory, did you know that you were adopted? So there has to be some jokes there, right?
Yeah, well, I always knew. So that my mum made it into a bedtime story. So she was like, you were loved too much. That was the thing. I was loved so much, I was given away. She was like, your birth parents loved you so much. They loved you too much. And they knew they couldn't give you what you deserve because you were so loved. So they gave you to us to love you more.
Right.
So I never...
There's definitely some jokes in that.
I never felt... Sometimes people are like, oh, adopted people feel abandoned. I was like, thought I was really special. I thought I was a really special child. I thought adoption made me special, not rejected.
Right, that's nice. But, you know, that, I mean, also, again, I feel that there will definitely be jokes there. But then also on a deeper level, that goes into, you can look into some studies about how early you should tell kids they're adopted. And if you tell them earlier, will that actually, you know, like it'd be curious to see how much your experience ties into like science and studies in terms of, you know, you feeling loved.
Yeah.
You know, because it is really interesting if because so much about who we are is narratives, right? It is stories, you know. Yeah. Part of our identity is, you know, sort of, you know, tying into a story, like religion is a story, right? So like your mother was smart enough to give you a story very early on, which suggested that you're more than loved because you're adopted. So
yes,
I'd be curious to look into that. There's got to be some good jokes in that, plus also that meaningful, you know, content of a show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Also, I used to, there was jokes about the fact that you don't pay for adopted kids. So like when my mom adopted the dog, there was actually more follow up, as in like they came out and checked the house, and my mum had to pay a voluntary contribution when she adopted the dog from the pound. But kids, you don't pay a penny for them, you just get them for free.
yeah, and they don't have to get licensed either.
Yeah, they don't have to get licensed.
Did you have your shots by the time your mother got you? Had you been dewormed by the time that your mother got you?
They just hand you, isn't it mad? They just hand you over.
Yeah, and when you grew into fruition, was your mother like, we thought her coat was going to be blonde, but she's actually it's like disappointed, like she's not. We were told she was purebred Irish, but there's a bit of something else in
so
her.
Mongrelly.
So there's a lot. There's so much. I mean, obviously, I don't know if that's funny or not, but like you just allow yourself the freedom to just take down all these different, you know, you sort of like throw the idea on the page and then it splatters, and one or two of those splatters will actually be good jokes, but you might as well explore all the splatters. You just never know which one is funny, you know?
Babies and dogs, the comparison, like shop, adopt, don't shop, applying that to a child is funny.
Adopt, don't shop?
Yeah. I'm right.
Coincidentally enough, there's an ad on the TV. I have the TV on silent because I'm like also watching all this horrible news flashing on screen. But right now, the commercial on TV is for the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Like, I'm not even joking. It's just a total coincidence.
Now they're asking, in Ireland as well, they're asking people to adopt the dogs from the foster homes or whatever, because they can't be looking after them in there anymore. So a lot of friends of mine have adopted dogs. They're fostering dogs. Oh my God.
I would love that right now. I know. I would love to foster a dog right now. I'm dying to do it. I'm not even joking. I actually thought, you know what? I'm going to get a small dog. Fuck it. Yeah, I've always wanted to have a dog. I travel too much. But I thought in this crazy crisis time, you make these weird decisions. And I was like, fuck it. I'm getting a small dog and I'll get all the nonsensical things that people do to get support so that they can travel with their dog. And I'm just getting a dog and that's it.
Yeah, get a dog.
Yeah, I know. But it is really inconvenient in terms of traveling. But fostering a dog right now would be my absolute ideal scenario. Yeah, I want to foster a dog really bad.
You'd go to the beach. You'd have the company of the dog.
Oh my God. I'm going to look. I mean, I wanted to do that anyway. And I think I tried to look into it, but it just kept coming up to get a dog. I couldn't find a way to get a dog temporarily.
Every day when I walk through Clapham Common on my way to wherever I'm going, whatever coffee shop I'm working in, and I pass these people and they're like dog walkers, and I'm like, I have this fantasy, like I've loads of fantasies. I have this fantasy of like just jacking it all in, just walking dogs. But then you're like, you'd probably be bored off your tits. Who knows? But dogs are great company, and because they're obsessed with you. They love you unconditionally. Get a dog.
Joanne, I know this is terrible, but I just got this paranoia. Is your timer is still clicking along there, right?
Yeah, I'm at 29:59.
Okay, great. Sorry. I was just like, I just need to check. This is a good conversation. And I got paranoid of losing it.
You're right to check.
Okay, so the first time I realized I was adopted. Okay, so now maybe another topic is the first time kids and other people in my life realized I was adopted and how people react to that.
Yeah, so I originally thought everyone was adopted. Because that was made into such a normal story for me that then, and I have done material on this before. Basically, when my aunt had her baby, I thought she had to have her own baby physically because she was from Kildare. I thought that everyone from Dublin adopted. Yeah, that's true.
Well, like country people had their own kids like farmers,
yeah.
But...
Yeah. Yeah. That it was like the civilized Dublin thing to do, and that like everyone, you know, when you're a child, you don't understand, and like everyone else were there having their kids in hedge schools down the country.
So they make their own kids down the country, but here we just buy them in a shop.
Yeah, like we're too classy to like physically have to have our own. Like, do you know what I mean? It's a bit backward. So that's what I thought, and then when I went to school and I realized no one else in my class was adopted, and then I realized then there was like social kudos to being adopted, because I would people were interested in it. And of course, it was of no interest to me. So when I realized they were interested in it, I have this really strong memory of standing in my school yard, in primary school, against the railings. And I was kind of risen because I was standing on some sort of ledge and there was a group of girls around me. And I was telling them, it was basically my first one woman show. I was telling them that I used to make up like these extravagant ways that my birth parents had been killed, even though I had no idea what happened to them.
You started making up stories about your past.
Yeah, that they'd been killed in a plane crash. Like, I was basically just loving the attention.
Yes.
And I was just making up these fantastical stories. I realized like people were interested in hearing about it. So I was milking the shit out of it.
But that's great because they can't verify it because you don't know. And if you don't know, they don't know.
we were like nine. And a plane crash just felt like the most dramatic way to go. I still think it's a pretty dramatic way to go.
And the kids would never know to ask like, which plane crash? Because there hasn't been that many.
Yeah. Or like, and why as a child you weren't on the plane with them? Like all the questions that you'd ask as an adult. But at the time, they were just like hanging on to them. It was great. Storytelling, basically. Old school lying.
And then I guess before you get into the obvious stuff about when you're older and you start looking for your birth parents and stuff, there must be some humor in, I guess, going through the thinking of your parents. Like there must be some jokes about, you know, your mother, like being concerned that, you know, maybe your birth parents were like problematic, or, you know, like there must be some humor in sort of like the judgments that would come from your own parents about what did they get?
I know that there was, at the time, there was other children offered with kind of medical conditions. And my mum wasn't against adopting a child with a medical condition at all. But she was just like, I need to know what it is. Do you know that way? They were my parents were so cool about it. Like, they were always like, look, you're adopted. You're too loved. That's the problem. You're too fucking lovable, so everyone had to hand you up, but if you ever want to go and find them, we'll support you 100%. Like, I had a very happy, there's no drama there with it.
I was just thinking of jokes in terms of like your own parents sort of like what would, like, so this is just comedy, this is a straight up comedy exercise right now.
What would be
the thought, you know, you're going shopping for a child, you know, like what is the thinking at the time, you know? Have you ever asked your mother that, like what was her thinking? Or like,
They try to match you up. So I did material about that. Like, so mum was saying like they do try and match up babies with the parents they're going to. Physically, I guess. Because at the time, because back in the day, now it's all cool to adopt kids. But back in the day, you probably wouldn't necessarily want people to know you'd adopted a child straight away. It was maybe your information to tell if and when you wanted to. So like, I don't know now. I don't have the data. But there probably wasn't a lot of like black families adopting white kids and white kids adopting black kids, or white families adopting black kids. People were probably staying in their own race and ethnicity. Maybe not. I don't know. But I think
But in that Ireland, was the vibe that wouldn't have been 80s. That much of a deal anyway.
Huh?
I wouldn't have thought in Ireland back then that wouldn't have been an issue anyway. I mean, I'm assuming most Irish parents were adopting Irish kids.
Yeah, of course. There was no black kids to adopt really in the 80s.
Yeah.
But yes, yeah, you'd want a child that looks like you, wouldn't you? And you'd want a child that is like you. But then she doesn't seem to care. But then she got me and she was like, I didn't know what to do with you because you were just like a little thirsty, attention-seeking child, basically.
And you don't happen to know if there's any like... Did your parents have any idea about the birth parents?
No, they don't know anything. Nothing at all. You come with the pamphlet.
So you can't put in a request like, listen, we'd like, you know, maybe that the birth parents are calm, you know.
No,
people.
Nothing. At the time, like, they were just so delighted to get a baby. Like, they were waiting years to get babies. Like, I think they waited a couple of years to get my brother, Connor, and then they were waiting another 5 years to get me. So at the you're just so delighted to get a baby. You're like, I'll take whatever. Give me that dud over there in the corner. I'll take that dud. They were just thrilled.
Yeah, of course, yeah. I mean, I get it. I was just thinking, I was thinking it more in terms of like non-reality comedy purposes of sort of just doing a bit of comedy on what was going through your parents' head, you know? But that's just for future, just because we're not just talking about your adoption here, we're trying to workshop a show.
Yeah, so I'd say that they were like, I must ask her, actually. This is the thing. Like, I only have the story. I haven't spoken to my mum about this in so long. I'd love to, like, pick her brain about it.
It'd be a nice, it's a nice revisit in your adulthood, your maturity, your change as a human being. It is a nice revisit, you know?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Do you know any adopted people?
I know tons of adopted people.
Irish or American?
Well, mostly Irish, only because I just know a lot more Irish people. I don't know that many American people, you know? Mm-hmm. I think there's a couple of comedians over here that are adopted that I've gotten to know recently, but
of course.
I mean, obviously I know PJ. I know a fair few. You know, when you're in addiction, in the world of addiction, you come across a lot of adopted people. A higher percentage than is represented in society, I can assure you.
Yeah, you do. Like, people have this weird idea. Like, I remember my mom was saying that this nurse in the hospital once, she had me and my brother down. And they were like, the nurse was like, oh, is this Connor and Joanne? She's like, yeah. And she's like, oh, I'm surprised. And my mum was like, why? And she was like, well, they're very attractive for adopted children. Like, that all adopted kids looked like little gremlins or whatever. People just have these weird ideas about adopted kids. When my leaving cert, during my leaving cert, the school went on fire in the middle of the geography exam. And we all had to be evacuated. Thank God, because I'd studied, you know, where you study like 50% of the syllabus. I'd done the wrong 50%. So I opened the paper and I was like, fuck.
Oh, right. I failed
this. Like, I'd done waterfalls, and actually what came up were like whatever. The lava. I don't fucking know. So anyway, I was like, oh, shit. And all the smoke started coming into the school. And I was like, thank God we were all evacuated. And I was chatting to this guy outside, and he was like, oh, apparently it was a pyromaniac junior cert student set the school on fire. And I was like, oh my God, wow. And he was like, yeah, he's adopted. As if like all adopted children are pyromaniacs. Yeah. But like, then again, you do look at a lot of it. There is a psychology to being adopted. Like, I mean, it's not a coincidence that a lot of comedians are adopted, I don't think.
Yes.
It has a knock-on
effect.
And
people have different reactions to it, you know?
Yeah, it does have a knock-on effect. And no more than trying to, like, unmix mixed paint, you don't know what parts of you would have rolled that way, whether you weren't adopted or not. You'll never know. But there does seem to be a correlation between addiction and the arts. Addiction, yeah. Comedy.
No, I mean, all comedy. That's why it's such a good topic, you know? And you have the past to talk about it. You know, you have the permission to talk about it because you're always jumping off experiences of your own life and then expanding it out to a more general conversation, you know?
Yeah. It's fascinating.
So
it's like a giant episode of Sliding Doors. I had a howl on their name. I was christened Caroline. No, Katrina.
Oh, that's right. You learned that when you with the birth mom, right?
Yeah. Katrina. I was like, oh, yeah, I could have pulled off Katrina. Katrina's a nice name. But it's so bizarre. It's like a hell. Who? Yeah, I don't know. It's just weird. You could
have about you ever have you encountered much? Just before we get into your actual birth mom, have you encountered much people that like see similarities between you and your parents? Just because they're looking
for
them?
Like when we were younger, mum said she'd bring us out, and they'd be like, "Jesus, Patricia, she's the image of you." Like, and I look nothing like her. Like, or one time, me and my brother, like. Connor is completely opposite to me. Like, I'm so white, I'm translucent. Connor's quite tanned. He's got dark eyes, dark hair. I've got blonde hair, blue eyes. And we went and got a sketch done of us as children on holidays in France. And your man drew us, knowing we were siblings. And sure, we look like twins. So people make, there's a mental leap that people make. There's an assumption that people make. And sure, I've done it myself. Like, I have a friend. Go on.
Sorry, I was going to say, I have a friend, she's half Indian. Her dad is Indian, her mom is Irish, right?
Yeah.
But her mom had a daughter before she was with the dad, you know, and my friend's parents met, they got married, they've had a few kids, but the oldest is not Indian. The dad isn't Indian.
Yeah.
And she was telling me that they were out one time, her and her sister. And somebody was like, oh, I can really see the Indian in you, but not in you. And she was talking about the one that's not Indian at all. She saw more Indian in her, even though she's 100% Irish.
Yeah, it's bias. It's just bias because you make assumptions and you just have a personal bias about things.
Yeah.
You know?
So, but... and then the next, obviously the part of the show is the birth parent thing. Now, you don't have to tell us the story about how you thought you had found your mom because they can just go back to you talked about that so well on a previous episode of this podcast, but just in terms of the show, where, you know, like, first of all, where are the jokes in the moment where you decide, actually, I want to know who my birth mother is?
So then the jokes are like, who am I? Like, why do I do this? And why do I do that? And why don't I do this? And why don't I do that? Because it's a curiosity about yourself, basically. You're trying to find a link for yourself, like a connection between you and the world.
Were there ever things that became absolutely clear to you that it was... Nurture was definitely what made you. Obviously, your accent and stuff like that comes from your upbringing. You can't change that, right? Mm. But was there ever things that were, other than the maths thing, was there other things that you were just like, holy shit, this is really from my nature, not from my upbringing?
Yeah, like the stage stuff, the performer stuff. That was in me. That arrived. That I arrived with that in me.
But did you then find out that there was some evidence of that from the previous generation? Or because it's hard to know if that's like nature or if that's part of the whatever adoption. Subconscious thing goes on in your psyche because you're adopted.
So my birth parents are fairly regular. Like, so she just kind of has a 9-to-5 job and he's an electrician. And when I first met them, I was like, what about the kind of performer stuff and the writing stuff? And they were like, no. And they're like, anyway, one, two, skip a few. One of my best mates, Nora, she comes from a very theatrical family. Like, her dad managed the Gaiety, that venue in Ireland. And her mum's an actor and her sister's an actor. And Nora's an exceptional writer. She's so good. And Nora actually came with me to meet my birth mum for the first time. So that's how close we are. Anyway, we were there living our lives. I was slightly disappointed that I didn't, you know, see the blueprint that I had envisioned for myself.
Yes.
I mean, my wet dream was that Twink was my mother. That was what I was working towards. Or like Linda Martin. Like, that's what I wanted, right?
Yes.
And so when I was met with just a normal people, and I was like, oh. And then it turned out, so anyway, me and my birth mother added each other on Facebook because, you know, modern life. And she asked me how I knew Nora's mother, because me and Nora's mother are also friends on Facebook. And I was like, oh, she's the mother of one of my best friends. And my birth mother was like, wow, that's a massive coincidence, because her granny and my granddad were actually cousins. So it turns out I'm related to Nora. So
no way.
Yes way. I know.
The whole time your best friend is your cousin.
Yes. Well, she's not she's like a second cousin. Like, there's a, like, but yeah, we're blood related. Yeah.
So sorry, yeah. I mean, you're like third or fourth cousins, but you know, that's distant.
No, it's really not. It's way like it's a classic Irish result, you know, that way. So like that kind of acting, theatre, writing side is there. It's just not in my, you know, birth parents directly. Or they didn't go down that route, certainly.
Yeah,
but like
my birth mother did say
that her dad used to write a lot of stuff.
I've heard more insane coincidences than that, but I'm not going to share them on the podcast because there's probably too many markers that make it obvious.
Yeah. You can tell me after.
But I'll tell you after, yeah.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, so that's interesting.
So that was like a magic moment where I was like, wow, like it was pretty exciting. I rang her.
I mean, there's probably some good jokes in sort of like doing jokes about what your ideal mom would have been, you know?
It's like, do you know what? It's like a review. Like, if you want to find yourself in someone, then you have to accept the shit parts of that person. Like, you have to accept that maybe you have the shit parts of that person as well as the good parts. So it's like reading a review. If you believe the good ones, you have to believe the bad ones. Do you know that kind of way?
Yeah, exactly.
So there's probably comedy in that. There's definitely comedy in imagining what I wanted to come from versus what I found, in the sense, without taking the piss out of what I found, because they're actually really lovely people and they're just sound or whatever. It's that it's the jokes on me that I wanted this, like, well, I wanted to come from this, like, panto.
There's probably also some jokes about being disappointed to find that your parents were kind of normal and not fucked up. Like, you almost want them to be fucked up, so you know, well, they had no choice.
Yeah. Or, but that doesn't bother me. I'm delighted I was adopted. Delighted. It's like,
yeah, I know, but I'm just thinking about jokes, you know?
It would have been nice if they had money. That would have been sound.
Yeah. Well, then you probably would have worked harder to really reconnect, you know? There has to be a payback, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be a fascinating show, you know, when you get into it.
Yeah, I will. I'm going to do that. That'll be my Corona show, will be the adoption show.
That's what you'll work on writing.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because you also have, people can go back and listen. I highly recommend, if you haven't listened, go back and listen to Joanne's episode from, you know, it's from a couple of years ago. But you have that amazing story of finding the alternative mom who wasn't your mom, but you couldn't let that go, you know?
Yeah.
And that is also just like some great humor, you know?
Yeah. She contacted me. I think I told you that.
I know you told me. Yeah. Not on the pod, but yeah, she contacted you recently, right?
Yeah. Just saying, I heard you on such and such and delighted to hear you found your birth. Anyway, that was for another podcast.
Yeah. But of course, yeah. But listen, like.
So what?
She's probably noticing you're getting a bit famous now. So now she's like, wants to be your best friend, even though she fucking rejected you. She rejected being your fake mom. Now she wishes she accepted you as her fake child, you know?
She's an artist. I was like, I would have loved to have been an artist. Whatever. Okay, what about you then? What are you going to do? What's your plan? Your corona plan? Your artistic corona plan?
I said at the beginning of this, I'm in the middle of just, I just wrote a feckin' show about my mom dying.
Yeah, but you're going to have to do something.
Yeah, I know, but like, I'm doing that right now. I'm in the middle of that. I'm not like I said at the beginning of this, I'm not sitting down and writing. I'm not in the process of working on a new show right now.
Yeah.
You know? But trust me, over the next couple of weeks as we're doing this, when I figure out you know, what I'll be working on in the future, I'll be using you to help me tease out some ideas. But honestly, right now, like, honestly, am I doing that show, but like from when it started until the coronavirus destroyed everything, I worked night and day to make it better after every episode. And to be honest, it was killing me.
Yeah.
Like nothing has been as difficult as doing that show about my mother emotionally, like in my life in terms of work. So, and that's including like living on minimum wage for a month at a time, living in another country, living in fucking China for a year, learning Chinese. Like nothing has been as difficult as doing that show. And I'm not even halfway through it. So, you know, I assume it won't be as difficult because I feel like the working on it was tougher than the performing it, you know?
Yeah.
Just kind of trying to make sense of it. So trust me, I am quite happy to not be fucking, you know, yeah. You know, that sort of, you know, that grueling feeling of just racking your brain, trying to find the humor in a thing. I'm quite happy to have a break from that. I'm quite happy to be getting into the silliness of TikTok videos and also the seriousness of discussing the coronavirus, which is miles away from, you know, dealing with the emotions of grief.
It's gas. So my show is different as in like, it's not, it doesn't emotionally drain me, but like, so because obviously I'm trying to get something going in the UK and I'm also trying to tour in Ireland, my calendar, and I was supposed to be in Melbourne, my calendar was so full. I don't think I had a night off until I think it was like May 9th or May 10th or something. And I was honestly kind of looking at my calendar. Like I was like, oh my God, I want to vomit. I was like, fuck. But I was like, this is what you do. You graft. This is what you do. And loads of travel and blah, blah, blah. And now that this has happened, I'm like, It's kind of nice having my nights back, my weekends back, and I've no choice. But also, it's hard to be creative when you're busy with travel. I mean, you've got loads of admin to do, and you're trying to book flights and all that stuff. I think you need to be bored to be creative. You need to be able to. You need space to think. Do you know what I mean? If you're constantly moving.
I'm 50-50 on that. I like a deadline. I liked the fact that I created a lot of Mia Mama. As I was doing it, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I do agree with you. There are certain things like TV ideas and stuff like that I find are good, like at this kind of bored time. But I also 100% know that feeling where you see this like insane busyness and then suddenly you get a break. But at the same time, it would have been nice if you were able to sort of hit mid-May and just like press pause for 2 weeks after banging out all this work, you know?
I know. Anyway.
But, you know, it's pros and cons. I mean, it is, I have to say, there is small elements of this that are enjoyable for me.
There are, at the same time, you're just being forced to stop. Like, you're being forced to stop. I could never make the decision myself to stop. I'm not at that stage in my career. You just have to take every single bit of work that's thrown your way. You take everything. So being forced to stop, you're like, oh, this is kind of nice, actually.
Yeah, because I think I might have talked to you about this, but I was fucking counting the days until the third week of April to just like get a break and just kind of shut down for a couple of months before it all ramped up again. So it just it did come a little bit quicker. But once I could see that it was coming, I get a strange anticipation of like not having to do the show for a couple of weeks. But at the same time, that was at a time where I thought I'll be back, you know, doing the show the second week of my project run. I wasn't really ready shut down until the end of September.
When's that?
It's over now.
Oh, shite.
No, everything's over.
No, I know, but
I've mentally prepared for not touring again until the fourth week of September.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at mentally. And I'm assuming that any work that I do in the meantime will be if during the summer the New York comedy clubs open up again, I'll just be doing spots in the city. But in terms of like proper shows, I've mentally prepared for, I've rescheduled shows starting the last week of September.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm going to do the same. Bren, who runs Vicar Street, was offering me a date in July. And I was like, I just don't think we're going to be back up and running by July, Bren. I think it's going to be September, realistically.
Yeah, and I think what harm in just delaying it all until the autumn? But the thing is that he's probably getting jammed up in the autumn.
Of course he is.
Yeah.
Great things will come from this. Great, like, you know, zingers of creativity. People will be writing scripts, writing films. Everyone's going to write a book.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I might sit down and do a bit of writing about my mom. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I have another thing that I'm working on that I don't talk about publicly just because I'm like, any grand television ideas, I'm very protective of them because, I mean, the history of television is littered with, you know, people robbing your ideas.
Peeving.
So I don't talk about them publicly, but I have a couple of other things that are on the boil, you know?
I'm very worried about the snacking. Like, if I have to be rolled out of here in 6 months' time, I'll be very upset about that. Like, there has
to be. Okay, so can I ask you a serious question about that?
Yeah, go on.
So, I don't feel any real desire to like drink booze, but there is that weird sense of suddenly all your guard goes down because you just think, well, society doesn't matter for a while, so I only need to check back in a couple of months and what I do in the interim doesn't matter. So I did get a fear for some people who might be like a little less solid with their drinking that they might just be like, you know what, for the time being, nothing matters. I'm just going to actually just drink again.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, in a situation where everybody is moaning and groaning about how much they're eating, who's somebody who has a history of like, you know, issues around food, is this difficult?
No, because do you know what? If my weight is completely controlled by my drinking, like I have quite a healthy diet. Like I do eat, and like obviously now you're just kind of going up and down the stairs to eat. Like it's basically now it's like being in an all-inclusive holiday. All you do is you're sitting around waiting till you can drink again, until you can eat again. But if I didn't drink, I think my weight would probably stay fairly solid. But I drink so much wine that that's what fucks my body.
So the snacking is not as much of a thing.
Well, I reckon if I was only dealing with one of those things, I could maintain myself. But I'm dealing with the two of them. So I'm dealing with snacking, eating, and drinking.
Yeah, but I would just worry if you stop drinking, then you might start fucking, you know, like, getting which sick. Is worth the fact that you drink too much or going into some sort of weird other fucking spiral, you know?
I don't think, I really don't think I would. My concern now is the drinking. That's my concern. Like, I mean, really? We've got so much wine we've gone through in the house because we're so fucking bored. It's just like 6 o'clock. You're like, are we cracking it open or what's the crack? And then, of course,
I know you got to be careful about that. That is really bad for your liver, you know?
I know. And then like all the video calls, they're like, oh, let's have a bottle of wine on Skype. And like the wine is a bigger concern. I think I'll give myself this week and then I'll put in some system where I'll be like, drink, save the drink. Don't start drinking until Thursday.
Yeah, or just drink at the weekends, like, just, you know.
It's a lot of time to kill. A lot of time to kill.
I know, but listen, it's totally killable without booze, just for the record, you know?
I know, but like, you see, we have different we have a different relationship with alcohol. I see it as like a break in the day. Like, do you know what I mean? It feels like you're doing something, which is actually the biggest trick ever, because you're not doing anything. You're just putting liquid in your mouth.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I got to think a lot of people are struggling with this. And there is such a license to do it because you don't have to wake up. You don't have to set the alarm. You know, it just doesn't matter. you know?
Yeah.
But that is dangerous. That's why I was mentioning that, that I did think that this is a dangerous time for overconsumption of alcohol. Definitely.
Oh, big time. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally. And sure, like, you know me, I'm a lush as it is. This is only just going to make it so much worse. So I'm going to have to do something about that.
Yeah, I mean, I would try to find some system that works for you, you know? The problem is that booze is such a weird thing, because if you had a glass of wine at night, it wouldn't be a big deal. But the problem is that one glass of wine makes you want to have more wine.
Yeah, exactly.
But wine, I have been eating way too much. Like, you know, and here's the problem.
You need to put on a few pounds, though. You've gotten kind of thin.
I don't shop in Dublin. And my house never has food. So often when I feel like snacking, I just don't have the bloody snacks in the house.
Yeah. You
know? Whereas like now, I my house is full of food because going to the supermarket's a pain in the hole, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I did a massive shop yesterday, $200 worth of food. And like, I bought too much. I'm actually not going to be able to get through it. And then my neighbor gave me half a fucking lasagna. And it's like, this is great. But now, like, what the fuck? Like, half of this shit's going to go off.
What kind of stuff are you stockpiling? You should be getting tinned goods. I have a couple of tins.
No, I've stockpiled plenty of tinned goods, but tinned goods are for the fucking apocalypse. I was just trying to get enough food for the week.
I know. This is the exact, like, so I have the palate, because of all my history with eating disorders and stuff, I really don't take an interest in food anymore. Like, I have certain foods that I eat and I just eat the same thing all the time. And that makes me totally, like, calm. Yeah. I don't get worked up or whatever. But I also have, like, I have a bunker palate. Like, I have an apocalyptic palate. Like, I will.
Yeah, me
eat...
too. I can live on, like, shitty soups.
Same. I will eat sausages in a tin. I will eat, like, all that. Yeah, are you the same?
Well, like, I like other food too, but, like, it always bothers me when people, like, somebody will say something like, oh, some, like, horrible tin soup or something, and I'm like,
delish.
Like, yeah, or for example, like, I have this thing from my student days where I would just get, like, whatever jar of pasta sauce with pasta, and I just put a tin of tuna in it, and it's like a tuna bolognese, and I love it.
Delicious.
And people are like, ugh, that's disgusting. But I'm just like, nah, I enjoy this as much as, like, a five-star restaurant.
You're the same. We're the same. My like, special dish that I make for myself is tuna rice. Heat up rice, put tuna in, bam.
Boom.
I used to put tuna into soup, which was a bit gross, actually. Yeah, I'm the same. I'm like, it's all going down the same way anyway. Who cares?
But weirdly enough, I don't like tuna on pizza.
No,
I feel like it ruins a pizza. But like, I could, you know, I get these, like, you know, because my mom used to get them. You know, my mother shopped like this a lot over the last few years because her health was so bad. She just sometimes she couldn't get out. But then I'd visit her and she'd be like, what'll I get? You know, what do you want for lunch? And she'd make me, like, whatever, like beef stew from, like, a Progresso tin. You know, so it's just tinned beef stew.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Like,
delish.
Couldn't be happier.
I know, it's the same.
And then other people are just like, oh my God, that's so disgusting. Oh my God, it's just people eating this horrible shit, you know?
I'm 2 days off buying Spam. Like, I really don't care. Like, I do not care.
I don't give a fuck either.
Me neither.
So the problem is that I do also like to mix it up, though. So I did buy some, like, pre-made salads from the supermarket, and they're all really good. They actually, American coleslaw is not as good as Irish coleslaw. Irish coleslaw is just, like, in my opinion, the best in the world.
It's like crap.
But,
like, it's so addictive.
But there is a homemade coleslaw in this local supermarket, Best Market, that's, like, as close as you can get to Irish coleslaw. Like, it is really good. And so I bought that, but now it's like, I have so much fucking food to get through. It's like I'm suddenly putting, like, half a plate of fucking coleslaw just trying to get through this shit before it goes off, you know?
Yeah, well, you have to remember, it's not, so the other way you're like, oh, I have to eat it, it'll go to waste. It's already gone to waste. It doesn't matter if it's in your stomach or
oh,
it's
no,
in the
fridge. I don't care about it going to waste. I just, yeah, like, you know, I just don't, I didn't want to waste the money, you know? I'd rather eat it than throw it out.
But then you'll get, but then, you know? Okay, when I was a kid,
no, it's,
like,
not a case of me getting fat. It's just a case of me not going into the tinned goods and sort of eating odd dishes where I'll just have, like, a steak and coleslaw. You know,
I have a tin of ravioli downstairs that all my housemates are absolutely appalled by. Like, it's all right, like, tinned minced ravioli, and I'm saving it for, like, a special occasion. I can't fucking wait to eat it. Oh, it's going to be amazing.
Oh, yeah, I'm big on the tin. In fact, it was one of the great things about this apocalypse was, like, suddenly I didn't look like a weirdo with loads of shitty soups and stuff.
Yeah, you just look like you're smart.
Yeah, well, I haven't done too bad, but there is, like, I'm probably going to have to put a few more things in the... Because I had a good routine. My first shop wasn't that big because I got here on Thursday. I hit, Wednesday evening, I hit the supermarket to get me through the weekend. And I did really well, but I didn't get enough. So what I ended up doing was just like sort of improvising a little bit. And that was great. So this time I got more, but now I'm looking at it and I'm like, Jesus Christ, like actually I overdid it this time, you know?
Do you drive in over there? Do you drive back and forth to the shop? You're completely set up over there.
Yeah, I have to drive back and forth to the shop here. That village is 10 minutes away in the car.
Oh, grand. Okay.
I'm really at the end of, like, I'm on a barrier island. In terms of, like, isolation, this is pretty good. I don't even live on the mainland. I live on a barrier island. Like, I live on the equivalent of, like, Dollymount Strand. Like, if there was houses in the middle of Dollymount Strand, that's kind of, like, the vibe that we have here.
Right.
You have to get over a bridge to get here, but I'm right at the end of that barrier island. Only one road in, one road out. So you're kind of like you're driving on the barrier island for like 8 or 9 minutes before you take the left over the bridge, possibly even 10.
Did you watch episodes?
Pardon me?
Did you watch episodes? Like I told you.
No, I don't even remember you telling me to watch it.
Oh my god, it's the best. So what are you watching?
Well, what is it?
Oh my god, I just think it's one of the best shows ever written. So it's Matt LeBlanc plays himself, but like he's a asshole in it. And it's like these two English writers, they move to LA and they write a show and Matt LeBlanc is in it and it's about their whole relationship. But it is honestly one of the best things I've ever seen.
When did you tell me to watch it?
We were texting. I put it in a text, but you didn't reply to that bit, so I guess you just didn't read it.
Oh, it was possibly when I was doing the switchover on the phones, maybe.
Potentially.
Because I definitely didn't see that. But anyway, if we're now talking about what we're watching, I think we need to finish this conversation.
Okay, go. Actually,
but for the record, I've just finished Narcos Mexico. I'm about to get into Succession. But in the interim, Killian told me to watch some movie about grief. He messaged me yesterday, which I can't remember what he sent me. But I'm watching some movie in the interim that's on Netflix that's about grief that he thinks I should watch. So I'm going to do that as a little stopgap, and then I'm moving on to Succession HBO, which everybody raves about.
Okay, I have to go. I have a call at 4:30.
Okay, great.
Okay.
So thank you so much, Joanne.
Thank you,
Joanne McNally Comedy. We'll chat again soon if you're not cheating on me with Sean Walsh.
Totally, yes, 100%. I'm Skyping him in the morning and you in the afternoon. It's fine.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.